It's On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris in for Celeste Headlee. The U.S. Supreme Court issued its historic ruling, Brown versus the Board of Education, more than six decades ago now. For the first time, it was illegal to separate public school students by race. In the years since Brown v. Board, many public schools in the South have resegregated. That's according to a recent report from the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. The study also found Latino student enrollment surpassed Black enrollment for the first time. Erica Frankenberg worked on the report, and she's an associate professor of education at Penn State University. Erica, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Also with us is Belisa Urbina. She is executive director of Ser Familia. Her organization provides counseling and other services to Hispanic families in the metro Atlanta area. Belisa, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
And joining me on the line is Atlanta Journal-Constitution education reporter Maureen Downey. Maureen, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Erica, let me start with another line or two from the report. In 2014, more than one in three Black students in the South, that's 35.8%, attended a school that was intensely racially segregated, meaning 90% of students were non-white. That is a 12.8% increase from 23% in 1980. Was that finding surprising to you in any way?
Well, I think that one of the things that's really important to think about with regard to that finding is that the South historically, because of the efforts it made after Brown v. Board of Education, had that really low percentage of Black students in these segregated minority schools. And so for several decades, actually, the South had the lowest percentage of Black students in such schools. As a native of the region in other areas of the country, I like to make that point. Right. When we work together to make this happen through a variety of court orders and other political efforts, we brought about tremendous change. You know, most people like to think of segregation as a Southern issue, and actually Black students were the most integrated. What's unfortunate is that in the last decade or two decades, we've seen an unraveling of the progress that was made. And so we have seen that increase for Black students in the South. It's still lower than Latino students in the region for a variety of reasons, but it's concerning that the advantages the South had no longer exist.
And Maureen, what does your reporting tell you about this resegregation in Georgia?
Well, it's been happening for quite a while in the South, and what it mimics is residential segregation in the South. We now have very segregated neighborhoods, white folks living in one area, North Fulton, for example, and Black residents in South Fulton, the same for DeKalb County. So what we have here is people who are choosing to live in certain areas, and the schools then follow. And the question that I've raised in my reporting is people are choosing to segregate in some respects by choice. And I've talked to both Black and white parents who question the value of putting their kids on a bus and taking them across town to attend a school that is more diverse. So I think the challenge here is that I'm not sure parents are as committed to this ideal as they once were.
Yeah. Belisa, what are you finding in working with Latino families?
We have been working with Latino families for the last 17 years. And what I have seen, you know, in the last, I will have to say, 6-7 years, is that Latino students tend to be more concentrated in certain schools. So I have seen that resegregation, you know. I haven't think about theoretically, but what I see in my everyday work is that Latinos are more concentrated in specific schools.
Do Latino families see this as a problem?
Not necessarily. I don't think they see it as a problem unless, you know, you go to the fact that most of these schools have less opportunities for the students than other regular schools.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the education reporter, her name is Nicole Hannah-Jones for the New York Times Magazine, writes, "The inequality we see, school segregation, is both structural, systemic, but it is also upheld by individual choices," which cuts to the point you were just making, Maureen.
Yeah, I think that's a good point here, and I don't really know how to deal with that point, frankly, because, You know, you go out and you talk to parents, and they value diversity. They don't. It's not that they dismiss it, but they like their neighborhood schools. And they also simply feel like they're entitled to the school down the street from them. That's one reason why they, you know, move to Roswell, or why they move to Decatur, or why they move to, you know, certain neighborhoods in Gwinnett County. So it's very difficult politically to come in and say, yes, you live down the street from this school, and you think it's a great school, but we prefer that your kid go to a school 3 miles down the road, and one of their, you know, major factors is increasing diversity. Yeah. That is not a good sales job for parents anymore.
Right. Erica, does this idea of this kind of segregation that's highlighted in your report, does it necessarily mean inequality in education when it comes to the quality of principals, technology, and so on and so forth?
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that we've continued to study this issue. For example, we find in the South that the typical Black and Latino student is exposed or goes to a school that's about 2/3 composed of students from low-income families. The typical white student goes to school that has 20% percentage point less low-income students. That matters for a variety of different reasons, including the exposure to educational opportunity that one of your guests already mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so the premise of the Brown decision was that segregated schools were inherently unequal for Black students. There was also something in the social science record that was submitted to the court that talked about how white students who were in segregated white schools in these areas that were challenged had this unfair sense of superiority. So there are a range of different ways of thinking about why integrated schools matter. And I think it's really important to think both about the harms of segregated schools, but also the benefits of integrated schools that students of all races, both Black and Latino students, but also white students, benefit from. And I think it's also important to because we've shifted the way we think about public schools, we've kind of gotten away from thinking about some of those benefits. We've translated schools to thinking about it as much more of a private good, that it's something that parents can buy in terms of where they buy a house. Of course, that overlooks the segregation in the housing market that still affect Black and Latino mm-hmm. affluent families even. But we think about it as a private good. It's what I want for my kid, instead of thinking about public schools as educating our community's children. And so when we shift in thinking about schools from this public good to more of a private good, it helps us in some ways to be comfortable and okay with the fact that we have segregation and that some students are going to schools that don't have the same kind of opportunities, which is profoundly against sort of what we believe public schools to be about originally.
So interesting. But Lisa, I'm wondering, with the families that you talk to and work with, do they see their schools where there is this high concentration of other Latinos from their neighborhood? Do they see those schools as being equal in terms of education, in terms of teachers, as predominantly white schools?
Not in all neighborhoods. You know, you have schools that have predominantly Latino students in some neighborhoods that you can see, and parents tell you that they are lacking the opportunities for the children. You know, the sporting facilities are not as good. They don't have the same quality of teachers. They don't have the same opportunities for the kids. So they notice. They know.
Yeah. A bit more from the report now, Erica. It is clear that the region is now moving backward in terms of the progress it made in desegregating schools. In fact, some states have recently created overtly racist policy proposals and rhetoric that simply ignores the reality that the region's future depends on developing the talents of people who live there and are the fastest growing segment of the population. Now, what states are we talking about here that are engaging in racist policy proposals, Erica?
So certainly one of the states that we can think about is my native state of Alabama. And in fact, in 2010 or 2011, they passed one of the most restrictive laws against immigration in the country that had a really damaging effect on the opportunity for Latino students who are scared even in some instances to go to school. Principals were reporting a drastic increase in absenteeism because of concerns about what was going to happen with their family. Also, some issues in terms of even schools requiring certain information from families that would have potentially revealed documentation status. All of these policies, many of these policies were blocked by the federal courts, so they're not in place. But even passing such laws, I think, sends a real chilling effect to families and communities that you're not welcome. And schools in particular, that goes against fundamentally the kind of trusting environment that you're trying to create, to be welcoming to all families so that everyone is engaged collaboratively in the educational environment. So, you know, that's certainly one example. We also know in many states in the South, and we talk about this in our report, that there are other policies that are really going to be challenging to integration moving forward. Certainly, there are places in the South that are creating these new school districts, like certainly the Gardendale case in metropolitan Birmingham has been a real flashpoint lately. The creation of that white enclave and the way in which that then creates district boundary lines that are going to impede desegregation
efforts.
These
are sort of breakaway communities, correct?
Exactly. Splinter. You can even call them, to some extent, seceding from a larger, more diverse school district, because we typically don't let students cross boundary lines to go to school. That has a real huge impact in terms of the overall segregation we're seeing in our metropolitan areas across the country, and is a growing issue in the South. There was just a recent report that said most of the new creation of school districts in this splinter-like format are occurring in the South. So that's a really big issue that is chipping away at another advantage the South had, which was having a lot of countywide districts that enabled more diversity because you had both communities of color and white communities in the same district and at least had different opportunities for student assignment that you don't have when they're in different school districts.
We're talking about school resegregation in the South. Our guest, Erica Frankenberg, she's a professor at Penn State University. Maureen Downey is with us. She writes for the Get Schooled blog on the AJC, and Belisa Urbina is with us, executive director of Ser Familia Incorporated. Maureen, do we see this? Do we see breakaway communities developing in Georgia?
Oh, we don't, because our Constitution won't allow it. Won't allow these new school districts, and that was, you know, essentially passed to prevent exactly what Erica described. Now, there has been effort in the legislature to undo that. It has not happened yet. What we're seeing in Atlanta, in the state as a whole, is we're seeing certainly growth in charter schools.
Yes.
And their report notes, Erica's report notes, that that's causing segregated schools also, because so many of the charter schools are predominantly minority. I have to tell you, parents would probably not care about that because they believe the charter schools are giving their child a better education. So whether or not their child sits next to a white student or an Asian student or an Hispanic student is not critical to them when they make that choice. But I think what we're seeing here is the residential pattern is leading to clearly schools that are increasingly either all African American or all white, and politicians simply do not want to wade into that. Frankly, they simply don't want to tell parents, and we in fact are a state that is, I think, to some degree embracing the notion that school is a private choice, a private good, and that parents should decide that. And there's no one in the policy level who should unravel a parent decision or challenge a parent decision on these other issues, including diversity. And I think that's the direction the country is going in, so I am not optimistic that diversity will win out.
Wow. Belisa, what are your thoughts on the impact of charter schools on Latino families?
Many Latino families are choosing charter school because of the same issues that we just talked about, that they believe it's better education for the kids. But my concern about our Latino kids to be entrenched, if we could call it that way, in a specific area or a specific school, is that there is already a sense of fear and distrust in the community. So just segregating our Latino children into specific schools in which they only have contact with other Latino students is not going to help. And if we take into account that Latino students as a group, they are growing more in our schools, are a greater percentage and greater numbers than any other demographic group, then, it's not a Latino problem anymore. It's a problem of our community. And we need to help these kids to be integrated and to feel that they are part of the community as a whole.
Let's hear from Gavin Sams. He is the founder of the Genesis Innovation Academy. That's a new charter school opening this fall in Southeast Atlanta. He says charter schools should reflect the diversity of the surrounding community.
For people to be involved would be helpful, because if you're in the community and you see a school coming that doesn't attempt to reach out to the broader community or doesn't want to diversify, then yes, the public should speak out. But certainly there are schools that are started in other areas and they're going to reflect the diversity of their area. I sort of feel like there should be probably some mandate to push that in that direction.
You know, Erica, I'm wondering, if I suggest to you the report won't lead to much soul searching on this issue because history tells us there's always been massive even resistance to ending school segregation, how do you respond to that?
I think to be in this line of work, I have to disagree with you. And I'll just cite a couple of reasons. First, we've seen actually a few years ago, the Civil Rights Project released a report showing that New York State was the most segregated state in the country. That went against everything that progressive New Yorkers believed about themselves. And as a result, actually, in the next few months, the State Board of Education in New York is going to consider adopting a wide-ranging integration plan to provide state incentives and financial funding to local districts to help them with integration efforts. So that's just one recent example of the way in which, you know, a report like this got under the skin of folks and really made them do the soul searching that you talked about. The second is that I'd like to just point out again that the South actually did something about it. And granted, some of them did it very resistantly. This, certainly the district I grew up in, did not want to desegregate initially. But a lot of school districts in the South, because of the long legacy of integration, have voluntarily continued to create integration policies. This doesn't mean forced busing the way we might think it is.
Right.
It's using choice with civil rights policies, which is different than, say, charter schools that often don't have civil rights policies, to try to create more integrated schools. Those are wildly popular schools, by and large, for example, magnet schools and the like.
Sure.
And so we see a lot of communities really doing a lot to try to further integration right now because of the benefits for all students.
Erica, thank you. That's Erica Frankenberg, professor at Penn State University. Maureen Downey's been with us. She writes for the Get Schooled blog on the AJC. And Belisa Urbina is the executive director of Ser Familia. Thank you all. And that's our show for today. But we want to hear from you. What do you think would prevent segregation in our schools? You can give us a call at 404-509-457. You can also post on Facebook or you can reach us on Twitter. That's our show for today. I'm Tony Harris. Thanks for being with us.